as the final presenter on the graveyard shift, I'll endeavour to move swiftly through and then get on to the panel session where I'm sure there will be lots of good questions. Just what I'll go through this afternoon briefly is a quick look at the background of the airport and where we've come from, some of the recent infrastructure developments and some of the achievements, and then the future plans in terms of where we're going. We're co-located with the RAAS base at Williamtown, as many of you probably know, and that's been the case in terms of civil aviation since 1948, when the RAAS first allowed civilian aircraft on scheduled services to operate into Williamtown. So this year is actually our 60th anniversary, so we've been celebrating that progressively throughout the year. Newcastle Airport Limited, as a not-for-profit organisation, was formed in 1993. And historically, the airport has been regional aviation, smaller aircraft linking up regional centres in New South Wales. And it wasn't until the late 1990s when Impulse Airlines started to develop routes into Melbourne along to Brisbane, and they began taking delivery of larger jet aircraft in around the year 2000 and into the early 2000s. That development continued in 2003 with the low-cost aviation boom, when Virgin Blue introduced services into Newcastle Airport, and that was closely followed in 2004 with Jetstar, and those services have continued to grow since then. The current organisation structure of Newcastle Airport, we're proudly owned by Newcastle City Council and Port Stephens Council, jointly 50-50 shareholders in the airport, and we operate on a leased area at Williamtown, a 40-year lease on 28 hectares, which for an airport site, 28 hectares is relatively limited in terms of expansion opportunities. We have an independent skills-based board at the airport and an appointed CEO. And the operating agreement that we have with the RAAF and Department of Defence means that for development applications and on-site development, purely because it's their land, we have to involve them in the process. So we apply for DAs through councils as well as through Department of Defence. So that's some of the regulations that we go through in order to develop the site. Just looking at the growth, it's certainly in recent years. You can see again from the 90s. Where the low areas are in the bar chart, where we were happily running along as a regional airport, and it wasn't until say 2003, 2004 where the low cost carriers really kicked in, and last year we successfully facilitated over 1 million passengers through the airport in a calendar year for the first time in our history. And one of the areas on that slide is the wavy line, which we always put in there, which purely indicates the number of aircraft movements through the airport. And obviously the number of passengers have literally gone through the roof, whereas the number of movements, purely because the aircraft that we're seeing through the airport are that much bigger, have remained stable or in some cases decreased. And again, when we're talking about operating jointly at a RAF base, those number of movements are quite critical in terms of the effectiveness of the operation. So from the late 90s, we were operating in an airport with this sort of size, with a relatively small tarmac, postage stamp size really, operating aircraft which were turboprop aircraft. And then in 2005, the redevelopment of the terminal and expansion of the tarmac, an $8.25 million expansion, gave us the facility that at the time was considered would take us well into the sort of 2015 up to 2020 in terms of the number of passengers and the number of aircraft coming through the terminal. The airline partners that we operate with, again skipping through this, the usual suspects, Jetstar and Virgin, good old aviation policy in Australia, flying to the same destinations, not quite back to back, but that's something that again which we're working with the airlines to try and get some new destinations and get them to take a little bit of risk with us and fly to some new destinations such as Adelaide, Darwin, which feedback tells us is high on the demand. Again, regional airlines such as Qantas Link, Brindabella, Aeropelican, and services across to Norfolk Island. just some recent developments at the airport. A major coup for Newcastle Airport just a couple of years ago when the agreement was made was the decision by Jetstar to position its heavy maintenance A320 hangar at Newcastle Airport. And this was, again, a lot of our regional stakeholders here put effort into securing this business, this infrastructure for the region. And the region beat off successfully other domestic airports that were seeking the business, as well as offshore engineering. So a major coup for Newcastle. And just last year, it was officially opened by Maurice Yemmer and Alan Joyce, as you can see there in the picture. I guess two people whose career paths recently have taken slightly different paths. But also last year, Tony Kelly at that time launched the 20-year master plan, which again was a significant development for the airport. Each airport in Australia was required to complete a 20-year master plan, which plots out where the airport is going and how it's going to get there effectively. And this was again a piece of effectively it's a document, and this had a lot of contribution by the stakeholders, obviously the councils as the owners, and also defence and the RAAF in terms of how we were going to continue to develop as an airport and get the growth consistent. For us, the 20-year master plan, it wasn't about the detail in it, and I think any airport that you speak to around Australia will say the same thing. The master plan began to take form in 2006, and some of the numbers put into the master plan when it was launched just last year, we're anticipating passenger numbers at the airport to reach around 1.5 million by the year 2015. And the growth or the development on the master plan was on the back of those figures. Nobody at that time quite envisaged the boom that would take place in terms of Jetstar getting more aircraft, Virgin getting more aircraft, and realistically, those numbers of 1.5 million, we could easily be doing those in the next 2 or 3 years as opposed to 2015. So that's why we say here it's not necessarily about getting all the numbers in, it's not about the detail, it's just about the actual process in planning. For us, the expansion of apron space in order to accommodate more aircraft, to get more of the Jetstar, more of the Virgin aircraft, but also to think further ahead. We see Southeast Asia direct services as being one of the opportunities for us moving forward, and that means that we've got to have the apron space to park bigger aircraft in order to service those destinations non-stop. Along with that, bigger aircraft, more fuel, so you need to have more fuel storage, etc. One of the other developments that we have on site is one of our major tenants, British Aerospace, who do a lot of work with the military on contract work servicing the Hornets, and they've expanded their footprint on the land as well. And again, that's another significant employer and economic driver at the airport. Along with more passengers coming off planes, it means more passengers need to park their cars and get to and from the airport. So again, another significant step forward for us is reviewing our car parking plan and how we're going to accommodate the growth that we anticipate over the coming years. And finally, the terminal expansion itself. So in the ideal world, you'd pretty much shut down and hold operation and say, well, we'll come back in 2 years' time and we'll have something great to move forward. But it's very much a staged operation for us. There'll be some pain along the way as we get there with car parking issues and with any sort of development work. But certainly, again, with the stakeholders that we have on board at the airport, everybody's very positive about the way forward. This was, again, the original concept of the master plan. Change of the road structure around the airport to make access that much easier, multi-deck car parks, development of a business park, and again the development of the apron and other aspects to make sure that as a business moving forward as an airport, it's obviously sustainable for the region. Phase one, if we could call it that, was completed earlier this year. The white area at the top of the slide there with the big Antonov aircraft parked on it is $10 million worth of concrete, and that's built at a strength that can hold an aircraft of that size. It just happened to be the second largest aircraft in circulation, happened to be there that day when we opened it. So we thought, well, if it's going to take a heavy aircraft, we might as well try it with one of those. So and it was at the airport on military business doing some work for the RAS. So we were also fortunate to have Joel Fitzgibbon there on the day to formally open the apron, and a great opportunity of joint cooperation between ourselves and the RAF in terms of using the facility. It also gives you a view there of the Jetstar hangar and in relation to the terminal as well. But this positions us very well moving forward in certainly in the next 2 years and beyond. The life expectancy of the apron is 20 years and beyond. Once you get the Antonov off, the apron, you can get another 3 Jetstar size aircraft on that piece of piece of concrete as well. So gives us the flexibility again to handle 5 or 6 of those aircraft simultaneously. That's the original picture of the map. That was the plan for 2015. As I say, we're heading there quickly. We're almost ready to start lodging DAs. And this is an architect's design of how the airport can look in as you see the times there. The apron is completed. Car parking should be completed next year, and then the international side of the terminal. We call it international. It will have the capability of handling international flights, but it will also be a multi-user flexible domestic international, what we call a twin gate operation, where you can create a sterile area for international. So we're not in the business of creating a white elephant of an international terminal for business that may not eventuate in the next couple of years, but further down the track. But we're certainly confident that domestic growth combined with some potential New Zealand traffic or Southeast Asia is certainly within the scope of the airport moving forward. And just finally, some economic impact statement, economic impact assessment that we do on a regular basis at the airport. 2005 was when we did it last time, which was to really understand what we as an airport bring to the region in terms of employment, in terms of tourism, and just the so that we can talk about the airport being an economic driver. The figures that we had then were obviously encouraging. Passenger numbers have grown considerably as the number of flights coming through the airport have grown considerably up to this year, so it was time to refresh this and renew it. And again, we see the growth in that period of time where we can literally attribute a certain number of jobs or a certain economic value to every additional service that an airline puts into the airport. So again, for us to understand our own business and also to go and discuss with the community and local stakeholders the real economic driver that the airport is. And that's it for me. So if we're